patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Very excited to have returning to the show, Blue Jays insider and host of At the Letters podcast, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Welcome back to the walk-off, man.
Thanks so much, Scott. Good to be joining you and Adam for some baseball talk here in the middle of January. And appreciate the invitation once again.
Yeah, we always appreciate you taking the time with the offseason. Have you got any downtime in? Were you able to have a little vacation or family time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the offseason definitely allows for a fair amount of downtime, which is great. So a bit of a chance to, you know, maybe get a few more workouts in, eat a little better, do some of those things that can sort of get pushed to the side during the regular season when there's a game every day just about. But it's been great to have a little bit of downtime. Of course, spring training coming up pretty soon. So before we know it, we'll be back to it.
Can't wait, man. So let's start with this. Okay. We do have a few listener questions that we'll get to at the end, but I had over half a dozen on this particular subject. So good place to start. International free agency took place this weekend, and man, the hype train for Emmanuel Bonilla is already full steam ahead. What can you tell us about the newest member of this Toronto Blue Jays organization?
Yeah, big bonus. Obviously, a lot of intrigue in Bonilla and what he can bring. He's an outfielder, just a teenager, right? So as with all of these players, there's so much uncertainty as far as what he's going to be able to bring, but clearly the bat is what jumps out. I mean, you're not going to sign a 16-year-old player based on his defense. It's because of what he can do with the bat. So, you know, I haven't had the chance to see him play in real time or even watch that much video, but intrigued. And obviously the price tag reflects a lot of interest from the Jays.
The international free agent process is an interesting one. Can you go through it for those of us who are unaware of how this works?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the international free agent signing process is really a complicated one. And it's one that MLB has, you know, at times pushed to move away from for various reasons. There was talk about adding an international draft. Logistically, that's incredibly tough to do. But the current system doesn't work very well. I mean, it's got a ton of issues. You've got young players being scouted from the age of 11, 12 years old, facing all kinds of pressure to perform because they can be signed as soon as the age of 16. And in some places, that can lead to a lot of just incentives stacked in one direction. It can lead to some mistreatment of these children, which is obviously very problematic. It's a really complicated situation. And of course, it's really not just one single situation, because in Venezuela, it's different than Panama, different than the DR, mm-hmm. different than Mexico. So, you know, you do end up with all kinds of different situations. It's one where the Buscones, the handlers of these young players, oftentimes get really big chunks of the cash that, you know, that the players sign for. So a lot going on with these situations. The teams, of course, try to navigate all of that and identify the best talent that can ultimately impact them at the major league level.
And then there's a money pool as well. So there's a cap on how much each team can spend, and you can even trade back and forth the money, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, if you're a team looking to operate in this realm, which, you know, of course, teams should, that's a very efficient way.
It's where Vladdy came from.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, just look at the team Dominican roster for the WBC, for example, or the Venezuela team. And it's like, there's a lot of talent to be found in those countries. So you really, you know, you have to operate in those places. And yet there's a set of rules by Major League Baseball, because the owners don't want to be spending $30, $40, $50, $60 million on each young kid that comes along who's really promising. So they have established these rules. These players, of course, are not part of the union, so there's nothing that they can really do to push back against them. These limitations exist. And what happens is teams then have to stay within those limits. And depending on what happens, for example, with their major league free agents, that's going to impact their total pool. as well as, you know, what they do from a trade standpoint, because you can trade some of those dollars around.
I know it's so interesting because even when you look at the Jays in particular, Emmanuel Bonilla, so much hype and a lot of talent, 16 years old, but 90% of that money pool was put towards him. So it seems like almost the strategy with a lot of these organizations is pick the guy that you think has the most possibility of hitting and then take a bunch of like flyers on other guys, right?
Yeah, I think that seems pretty accurate. Like, it's almost like a Stars and Scrubs approach where it's like, okay, if we want to get this big guy, then that's going to cost, you know, a huge chunk of the pool. And we've seen that before. The Jays, of course, did that with Vladdy. Worked out great. There have been other times where they've maybe spread it around a bit more. You know, Kirk wasn't a big bonus guy. Moreno, when they had him, wasn't a big bonus guy. But you can spread it around. And, you know, this is an area for the Jays under Andrew Tinnish, who really spearheads things for them in the international market, where they've done really well. I mean, you think about, you know, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., Moreno, Kirk, you know, obviously Vladdy is a huge
success. Ben, would you say
success.
A lot of that is development, right? Because they're 16. So is it how the Jays are going about turning these guys into big league players?
I think there's no doubt there's some of both, for sure. Because, you know, even with Vladdy, there was development for him from the time that he arrived in their system. It's not like he arrived as a finished product or even arrived in the majors as a finished product. So no doubt there's some combination of both things. Hard to pinpoint, but you know, you need that initial talent. You need some sort of skills, whether it's, you know, bat speed, foot speed. You need some raw tools to work with, and the Jays have found players who have those raw tools.
Really appreciate you clearing that up, because it is such a complicated system there, so appreciate it. Saturday afternoon, it was leaked by the Scott Boras camp that the teams that were in heavily on Xander Bogaerts included the Toronto Blue Jays. Now, obviously, anything from that Boras camp kind of needs to be taken with a grain of salt, obviously. However, it is kind of interesting to hear the Jays were in on him, even if it was just at a small...
Kicking the tires.
Yes, exactly. Even if it was just kicking the tires. So I'm curious what this means for Bo Bichette. I know everyone is making a big deal out of this arbitration hearing coming up, which probably blowing it a little out of proportion, being arbitration is something every player deals with. However, there is a substantial gap between $5 million and $7.5 million. Like, that's a 33% increase in what Bo's camp's evaluation of him is. And the Blue Jays evaluation. So where are we at on Bo Bichette and the fact that they are checking out other big time shortstops? What does that mean?
Well, it's all very interesting. And I would tend to look at these two storylines as, you know, obviously they both have to do with the Blue Jays and their shortstop situation, but I would largely look at them separately. So if we start with the Bogaerts one, and I would probably add Carlos Correa to this mix as well, because he's a player who at least was on the Blue Jays radar. Again, not saying the talks got serious, but you know, these are the caliber of players that we've seen the Blue Jays check in on very regularly in the course of the last few off seasons. And we know that they were pushing for Justin Verlander. We know that their payroll is pushing over MLB's competitive balance tax threshold of $233 million. So this is a team that's capable of spending. They've gone after big players. They've signed big players, so including a lot of Scott Boras clients. So Xander Bogaerts definitely could have been a fit on paper. Same with Carlos Correa. How those pieces fit together, does that mean that someone would have played third base? You know, Correa or second base potentially. Obviously, with the Blue Jays, Matt Chapman's a free agent after this coming season. Maybe that would have figured in and someone would have shifted over. Maybe Bo Bichette would have moved. Maybe he wouldn't have. We'll see. I mean, or actually we won't, but essentially, you know, that's a topic that the Jays are open to. They have been open to it. I don't think that says they're not interested in Bo Bichette as a shortstop. I think it just says that when they're really good players in free agency, the Jays check. So Bogaerts, Correa, those are the kinds of players the Jays check on. And I think in Boras, when Boras is saying that, I think that he's saying, my guy, Xander Bogaerts, had tons of interest, and he was going to do really well for himself. So I think that's about Boris and Bogarts, not really about the Jays. Now,
so that's almost self-promotion at that point, right? Yeah. He's like, hey, I'm going to get you money. Right. Yeah,
exactly. And I mean, and Bichette is not a Boris guy. So he's like, I'm going to boost up Bogarts and I'm going to, you know, really do my job and let it be known that he had a lot of interest. So I see no problem with that. I think that's my read on it. Could be wrong, but that's how I see the Boris stuff. Then you get to the arbitration stuff with Bo, and that's really interesting because of last year and the way things unfolded for him, where he had an offer from the Blue Jays to renew his contract at a certain amount. I want to say it was about $743,000, and Bichette didn't like the system, the pre-arbitration system that would have awarded him that money, so he declined that and took a lesser amount, closer to the MLB minimum. I think it was about $720,000 that Bichette ended up earning in 2022. So that's a bit of a statement. Then going to arbitration, this is a big gap. This reflects a substantial difference in how the sides see Bichette's value and see his comparables. To some extent, it's business. I'm sure that's how the Jays would frame it. But for Bichette, we're seeing clearly he's willing to challenge the team on his value. And that doesn't mean that there's ill will, but it does mean that he's not afraid to stand up for himself in this way.
So Shai Davidi just reported that Russell Martin will be on the World Baseball Classic Team Canada coaching staff, which of course to Blue Jays fans is very exciting. We all remember him ending his career with the Blue Jays. His last game in a Blue Jays uni was actually as the bench boss, right? John Gibbons gave him the opportunity to take over the reins there. Do you think we could see Russell Martin get into coaching? Have you ever gotten the sense that this might be something that interests him? The Jays do have an opening with Matt Bushman gone, right?
they do. That's an interesting connection. I don't think that I think the Jays need someone who can really dive into the weeds of the pitching stuff to replace Matt Bushman. As for Martin, you're right. It's really exciting that he's going to be contributing to Team Canada in some way. He's obviously been a part of that program for a long time now, and Jays or Canadian baseball fans certainly know and appreciate him. I think at the same time, there's a big difference in commitment from a family standpoint. I know he's got a young family, you know, to doing maybe a month or 3 weeks of WBC compared to the full season. And the last time that I heard from Russell Martin, I wasn't there over the weekend, but I heard from him in the summer when he was here. I'm not sure when exactly, but he was at Rogers Center in the summer at some point. He was saying how much he enjoys golfing, how much he enjoys spending time at home. And yeah. So, you know, it's a bit of a tough sell, you know,
when you're enjoying retirement that much. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So I wouldn't hold my breath on him being a major league coach.
He doesn't need the money anyways. It would have to be a thing of love for him to do it. So we'll see. When it comes to transactions, obviously they've slowed down outside of the international free agency that just happened. The heavy lifting for most teams has been done, but there are still some quality free agents out there that could truly help baseball teams that are still in need. When you look at the Toronto Blue Jays, who have you heard name-wise that is attached to them? And if you can't get specific with names, then logically, who would fit with some of their still pending needs?
Yeah, this is a team that I think could use a reliever on a minor league deal, high upside reliever. You know, we've seen names like Alex Reyes mentioned as possibilities. I think that could be interesting, especially on a minor league deal if you're not giving up the 40-man spot. I think rotation depth is a question still for this team. Drew Hutchison obviously picked up along with the waiver claim from Pittsburgh. So, you know, there are some ways to add a little bit of insurance there behind the starting five or six, including Yusei Kikuchi and Mitch White in that group. But at the same time, you know, there's certainly they could benefit from more starting pitching. And I think on the position player side, they probably have 12 spots spoken for if everyone's healthy at this point. And then that 13th spot on the position player roster, likely, you know, does that go to a Nathan Lucas at this point if the season were to start? lefty hitting, outfielder with options remaining. You know, that's not the most exciting or established option. So is there a way to get a right-hand hitting outfielder? Someone, again, is this a minor league deal? Maybe it's a switch hitter. Maybe it's not a right-handed hitter. But now that they've added the three left-handed hitters in Varsho, Kiermaier, and Belt, there's probably a case to be made for adding a bit of balance there.
Adam Duvall and Robbie Grossman just seem to be the names that keep popping up. And I don't know if it's just that their bats and their splits make sense. But what have you heard of them? And do you think there is a fit there if the teams could the team could come to agreement?
Well, you know, with Grossman, he's a good player, does a lot of things well. And the Jays did check on him earlier in the offseason. At the same time, if you're Robbie Grossman or Adam Duvall and you're looking at the Jays right now, I mean, logically, you can tell yourself, okay, George Springer and Kevin Kiermaier, maybe they haven't been the most healthy. You know, I can, or Brandon Belt, same thing. I can see a path to DH or outfield playing time, but it's not immediately available. Mm-hmm. So if you're those guys, I think one hurdle for the Blue Jays in trying to sign a player of that amount of pedigree, someone as established as those guys, is the path to playing time is not immediately there. Now, one injury would change things. Or, you know, if you're signing someone with a little bit less of a track record, then you bring them in, they have to prove it, they understand that it's a bit of a different equation. But at this point, the depth chart is full. You have three outfielders, you have two DHs in Kirk or Jansen plus Belt. You know, it's not a place where an established player is necessarily going to look. So I think even though the Jays talk to Grossman, I'm not sure that that's a situation I'd expect to see develop in the next couple of weeks.
Just circling back to Alex Reyes, what are the chances that he's at a point where he would sign a minor league deal? Is that what the holdup in him signing is? Because I know that he's getting interest from numerous teams.
Yeah, I would think at minimum a minor league deal is going to be available to him with some really good incentives. I'm not privy to exactly what the offers are. I'm not sure. His reps definitely would be doing a good job if they get him a major league deal. And conversely, if a team is able to pick him up on a minor league deal, risk-free, I mean, that's a great move that I think all 30 teams would probably want to do.
Is there anybody, and I know you already mentioned Nathan Lucas, is there anybody from within this organization, a prospect that you can see making and contributing to this team in 2023?
For sure. And I think there always are, whether that's a Spencer Horowitz, whether that's an Addison Barger, they're guys who are pushing their way up closer to the major leagues. You know, for the Jays, they haven't necessarily developed a ton of outfielders in the last few seasons, which is probably why we saw so much focus there in the last couple off seasons, trying to get, you know, whether it's Springer, whether it's Varsho, whether it's Kiermaier, trying to reinforce things. You know, Grichuk, of course, acquired in a trade, Tapia acquired in a trade. Mm-hmm. They've tried to go outside the organization to fill in at the outfield. But I think broadly speaking, Horowitz and Barger are probably a couple of the position player names to watch where, you know, on the pitching side, obviously the big name people are looking at is Ricky Tiedemann.
Spencer Horowitz can play a little left field, right? I know he's primarily a first baseman.
Yeah. My sense is that you're talking about a corner guy. I am looking forward to watching him a bit more in spring training and get a sense of how realistic, you know, it is for him to add a bit of versatility. But yeah, on paper, that makes a certain amount of sense.
It's interesting with both Horowitz and Barger because there's been so much talk about lefty bats, and now they're kind of at a point where, you know what, a righty might be a better fit.
It's wild, right? Like, it really shifts pretty fast. We've gotten so used, like, ever since the 14, 15, 16 Jays of, you know, Edwin, Batista, Donaldson, they were such a right-handed heavy team, and that worked really well for them. And then now it's Bo and Vlad and Springer and Kirk. You know, they really do have a righty heavy team once again, and that can work, but now it's started to shift where, you know, the tide is definitely turning to the left at this point.
Varsho and Belt, they're going to help balance this lineup substantially, right? Probably more than most fans think it will.
Yeah, I mean, with Varsho, I think there's a pretty high degree of certainty that you're going to get a lot of production, you know, definitely defensively, what he was able to show last year, you know, he can do a lot offensively, where he can connect with some high velocity fastballs. He can drop down a bunt single. You know, I think he's a pretty safe bet to be an average to above average hitter for 500-600 plate appearances, which is a lot easier said than done. So that's a big addition to this lineup. I think with Belt, you know, what we saw in 2020 and 2021 from him was really good production. You know, that would be great. The Jays would be
middle
thrilled.
Of the order production, you could say. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
29 homers, right? In I think it was about 97 games for Belt in 21. So, I mean, that's incredible production. At the same time, like, let's see how this knee responds to, you know, he's showing up in spring. He says he feels great. That's awesome. That's step one. Now, how does it work after, you know, he's played four games in a row? And what is day game after a night game look like for him? How does it work on the turf? I mean, these are all questions. He's going to be DHing, so the turf is probably less of an issue for him than it would be for someone like Kiermaier. But it's not a given for a guy who's 34 years old. You know, and the Jays clearly believe that he's capable of doing better than he did in 2022. And I don't think that's a huge leap of faith either. I think there are reasons to believe that that's possible, but yeah, I mean, it's a question. It is a question what he can bring.
So for the last 2 years, well, maybe not quite that long, maybe the last 18 months, it feels like catching has constantly been at the forefront of talking Blue Jays baseball. Just they had three stud catchers on their way up. How was playing time going to work out? All of this stuff. Is one going to be moved? And now that the picture is cleared up, I'm really curious what you think about the tandem of Danny Jansen and Alejandro Kirk and how their playing time split is going to look. Is one of them going to be a number one catcher? Is it going to be a 50-50 split? And I'm curious what you think about how Varsho sprinkles in behind the plate.
Yeah, it's still an area of depth for the Jays. You know, to have two catchers in Jansen and Kirk who can do what they can do, that's a great starting point. And I think, you know, they definitely kept the two catchers who have the most established track records, who have the most upside for 2023. Those guys are positioned to each, I think, get a lot of playing time. I mean, if you're Jansen or Kirk, I wouldn't be worried at all about getting your reps in. You're going to get your chances, you know, in 2023, whether it's DH or whether it's catcher. I mean, to start the season, you're probably going to see Manoa paired with Kirk. We might see Jansen paired with certain starting pitchers. Then you're going to try to avoid day game after a night game. You're going to try to avoid catching Kirk three games in a row. I doubt they do that very much until the very end of the season. And then, of course, DH is going to be a factor as well to some extent. But, you know, it's I don't think you need to concern yourself if you're the Blue Jays too much about exactly, you know, what the target is, because it's going to be fluid. You're going to make those adjustments in season. But I would think that Jansen, you know, is Jansen catching 85 games and then Kirk is catching another 70 games and then Varsho's catching seven? That would be my guess. Something like that's probably their plan A. And then, of course, Kirk would be DHing a lot in that situation. He might be DHing 70 games. Belt would be DHing 90 games. Belt plays another, you know, 10 at first base, like pinch hits another 20 times. Like there are pathways, and that's if everyone's healthy, which they won't be. So all these guys are going to have chances to play.
So is that an indication then that this transition of George Springer from center field to right field is this team optimistic that means he will have to DH less?
Probably, yeah, because, you know, Springer's definitely had his share of DH at-bats in the last couple of years as well. You know, end of the day, if it comes down to, you know, both Springer and Belt, for example, need a day off their feet, I think you got to get Springer in there as the DH as opposed to Belt, because he's George Springer. He's one of the better hitters in baseball. So, you know, at a certain point, that could end up impacting, you know, there could be a trickle-down effect there. But the good thing about Belt is, you know, if he can come close to replicating his 2020-21 track record, or even, you know, just let's just say his career numbers, you know, let's say it's a 110 WRC plus, a bit better than that against righties, then he's someone who can come off the bench pinch hit for you against a really tough righty. You know, that's not an easy ask, but they've certainly had Kirk do that regularly, but Kirk's going to do that from the right side. To have someone from the left side who can do that is a plus for the Jays.
Ben, we so appreciate your time and generosity with it and coming on the show. It means a lot. We do have a few listener questions we're going to try and get to here before we know you got to take off here, but we'll try and get to as many as we can in the next 5 minutes. Adam, all yours.
Okay, first one comes in from Jenna. Jenna says, sometimes free agents get overpaid based on the available talent pool around them that year. Lots of examples of that this offseason. There really aren't any shortstop free agents to get excited about between now and Bo's free agent year. So any contender in need of a shortstop is going to be pretty thirsty by the time Bo Bichette services become available. So Ben, please look into your crystal ball. It's 2026. Does Bo's contract start with a 2, a 3, 4? What's the number?
Yeah, great question. It's going to start with a big number. At this point, it certainly won't be surprising if he gets to free agency and tests that market as a young free agent. I would say the safe bet is probably starting with a 3. You know, AAVs tend to go up as the years go on. So, you know, is that 34 times 10? I mean, that's 340. And then that's, he'll already be past ARB years at that point, and he's going to make a lot of money in ARB. So, yeah, I would say 3 is probably the best bet.
It's so wild to me. He's only 27 at that point. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
What happens when you start at 21?
All right. Last one we're going to make time for today is from Mr. Krister. Wants to know, when the season is in full swing, how do you achieve work-life balance given the grueling 162 game schedule? Is it possible to even follow any other baseball or other sports teams during the season?
Great question. I am open to the tips on that front. If anyone has advice, if anyone has if anyone's figured that out, please tell me. I definitely have not figured that out. I think it's a work in progress. I mean, try to I go for runs. That's a good way for me to kind of mentally clear a little bit of space. It can be tough in the season because it's a lot to take in. It's a lot of information. It's a lot of texting and emails and staying organized, all that stuff. I do not follow other sports really during the baseball season. Like, I follow the NFL during the winter, but I don't really watch the NFL in September. I don't care about NFL training camp. It's more like when the off season starts. And then, I do follow other baseball. Yeah, I do. Cause it all connects. So I feel I definitely follow other baseball, but I don't care about like NBA playoffs or something. It's not that I don't like it. I get it.
For sure.
It's been even interesting on our end how, you know, we were so focused on the Blue Jays, but the longer we run this podcast, the more it just becomes
It's hard to not pay attention to the Carlos Correa
saga. Baseball just
bleeds
into everything. Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your time. This has been great.
You got it, guys. My pleasure. And thanks to all the listeners as well. It's always good to hear your questions. And thanks for having me on today.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh, with a drive. Season cracker shows to pitch to him.
Thanks for listening.